So changing the color is a huge part of a reason why we're addicted to solvent, and then also the myth that you need solvent to clean your brushes.
Welcome to the Passionate Painter Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Italia Carlson. Whether your art is a full-time career or your side gig, if you are passionate about creating art, this podcast is for you. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you. And you can find them at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Don't forget, my portrait painting masterclass, The Portrait Code, is now available at PassionatePainterAcademy.com. I created this course for all the painters who tell me they can paint other things, but they just can't paint portraits. This course shows you how to approach painting portraits to get a great start, even if you're scared. And it shows you how to assess your progress and get back on track when you've gotten in the weeds. And if you're feeling insecure about any of the fundamentals, such as mastering the elements of design, composition, perspective, anatomy, color theory, or mixing skin tones, I've got you covered. There's a robust module on each, in addition to a complete portrait demonstration and an 8-lesson module on confidence. Learn more at PassionatePainterAcademy.com. And if you happen to be one of the people who says, "That sounds great, Caroline, but it just won't work for me," I invite you to send me an email at Caroline@PassionatePainterPodcast.com. I'd be happy to chat with you about where you're at in your portrait journey. And if you like, look at one of your portraits together to figure out where you may want to focus to take your skills to the next level, whether or not you purchase my course. Again, you can reach me at Caroline@PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Welcome back. Today, I get the privilege of introducing you to American artist and author Kimberly Brooks. Kimberly's new book, The New Oil Painting, is packed with information that I think should become the new textbook for oil painters. It explains not only the chemistry behind what you really need and don't need for oil painting, but how you can get away from having to use solvents when you oil paint. Speaking for myself, the possibility is very exciting, and I've already started implementing my chalk and oil combination instead of solvent. I've just started this process, but for me, it's already a game changer. Our conversation ran over an hour, so I've split the interview into two episodes. Part two is available now at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode71. Kimberly Brooks is a contemporary American artist known for her portraits and landscapes in series addressing history, memory, and identity. Her work has been showcased in numerous juried exhibitions among museum curators, including the Whitney Museum of American Art and the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA. Her recent solo show, Painting Architecture, at the Museum of Art and History, Lancaster, featured large interiors and landscapes collapsing in on one another. Throughout her 30-year career, Brooks has focused on the medium of oil, with an occasional integration of gold and silver leaf. In 2008, Brooks started to feel increasingly suspicious about the fumes she inhaled as part of her practice. Coinciding with modern science and historical manuscripts, Brooks created an ultimate guide for oil painters, illuminating why solvents aren't necessary, and included the guide in her hugely popular new book, The New Oil Painting, published by Chronicle Books. Brooks's work has been the subject of several books, including Brazen, a painting and poetry collection, and Fever Dreams. Brooks speaks about her work and creativity to schools, museums, TEDx, and was recently a featured artist for the National Endowment for the Arts. She conducts workshops at institutions online via her acclaimed artist program. Kimberly Brooks lives and works in Los Angeles. You can find all the links about Kimberly Brooks in her show notes at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode70. Kimberly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to get a chance to talk to you. You have written
A New Oil Painting.
I love this book. This book is huge. It's very important. My people, please check this book out. This is super important for safety and general education for people that are using oil media. Frankly, this should become the textbook in art schools everywhere. It should be required reading. You don't have this. You don't have this in audio, do you?
I actually just reached out to Chronicle Books, who
because I need that.
Yeah,
I need an audiobook.
Yeah, I need to record an audiobook.
That will help me just go over and over the concepts because there's so much there that I want to remember. And you talk about all kinds of mediums. You talk about solvents and safety while you're in your studio. This covers so many topics and it's a deep dive. I'm still going through it with my highlighter pen because a few years ago, probably 5 years ago, I suddenly developed allergies to like every chemical on earth out of the blue. And I think it was the perfect storm because there's so many chemicals in our environment without turning purposely to something like oil paints and adding that and the solvents. I was working at the time, I had a job managing a print shop. So I was doing some graphic design and working in the print shop at the time. But I'm very allergic to formaldehyde, and that's always been the case, apparently. And the adhesives in the formaldehyde, the laminating products, and the paper. I had no idea how much formaldehyde is involved in the production of paper. And there was paper dust everywhere.
Wow, that's fascinating. I didn't mention that, come to think of it. I mean, I have a whole section on paper for painting, but it's very focused on painting. But whenever you have off-gassing as a part of, as a byproduct of the production process, so when we get paper at the art store, it hopefully has finished off-gassing. But I've once bought oil prime linen from a huge New York company, pre-prime linen, because it was in the days when I was in the mood for the silkiest, most fabulous, you know, and I got the same manufacturer that Hockney uses, David Hockney.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to contact these people directly and buy a big roll. And I don't know what was in that roll, but my lungs would seize whenever I unrolled it. And it got to the point, I kept putting it further and further back in my studio.
Yep.
And yeah, same thing happened to me. I got just 15 years into painting. I was stapling canvas to a wall because I was in the mood. I'm very experimental, but I was in the mood for not allowing the feeling of preciousness of the object of a painting own me.
Totally get you.
So I wanted to feel like, oh, you know, this is going to be the Basquiat me, the one that just flings paint around and scribbles on it because I don't care, because I'm not feeling like I'm painting on a precious armoire of furniture was $300 and the highest, you know, and all that. So I was admittedly in a corner of the studio because the drawback to stapling, and I got one of those power staple guns, and I figured I'll stretch it afterwards if it's the Mona Lisa. But the drawback of stapling it to the wall is that you can't take it off the wall and turn it around until it's dry.
Right.
And that's a key part. It made me realize the whole experience that's a critical part of the oil painting process is being able to have a fresh look and to turn it around and turn it away from you. But, you know, those were early days. So I was in a corner, you know, I was not in the most ventilated place. And as usual, without thinking about it. And by the way, this is what I was taught in schools in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Paris. You know, like I had always been taught the same. You have a little tin, whatever you want to put it in, of solvent. That's kind of to rinse your brushes off. And then, of course, your glazing medium was a third Damar, a third solvent, and a third linseed oil, which is what they teach. It's in the Ralph Meyer handbook. It's in all these books, this daisy chain of books dating back to the mid-19th century. And so it was de rigueur, you know, like just like that's how you changed your brushes. And suddenly my lungs started to feel really like something was heavy on them. And I went outside. It was a beautiful sunny day in Venice where my studio is, and had a little patch of grass in front of this little garage that I had been renting. And I just put my hands on my knees and I leaned forward and I couldn't pull in a breath. I mean, it was the scariest it was the scariest thing. And, you know, I'm kind of, and I thought to myself, I'm poisoning myself. It was just, you know, and I'm a mom with two kids. And if you go through pregnancy, for example, and you, because I'm very cerebral, so it's easy for me to get disconnected from my body, which is like, you know, just sort of not pay attention to things. But when you go through motherhood, especially, or you just start to become really sensitive to what you're putting in your children's bodies and your bodies, you know, like that's going to wake you up to it, you know? And I just said, I need to stop using this stuff. Like I have to stop. And that was my ferocious moment of saying, okay, what's the lay of the land? What do I use? Do I go to acrylic? Do I go to water miscible oils? Do I go to, you know, what is this concoction anyway? Anyway, like, yeah, I had a similar moment.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. But, you know, I had similar, I had always had eczema. That was something that I discovered in junior high. And I managed it by avoiding a lot of unnecessary water. My hands would react to water. They would dry out very quickly, things like that. But when this started, I was older. And it was a different kind of reaction. I was told it was a secondary form of eczema, but it was the perfect storm of the formaldehyde in the paper, the adhesives, probably some of the inks, just all the chemicals. And I was also oil painting. And I had a similar come to Jesus moment where I was in my studio before I got my air purifier, which I'm going to ask you about. But I remember a couple of different sessions, even a couple of years ago, where I'm standing at my easel and I started to feel like I was going to black out. I started feeling like I was going to faint. And I ended up, like, my husband came in and I was actually sitting on the floor and he's like, what's the matter? And I just started to see those black spots. And I didn't know why. I was covering my solvent. I was in a small room. The window was open. I had a fan. I was lost.
It's the thing. It's this myth that you can protect yourself from air, from what the air you're breathing. Even, and you know, the shocking thing is they don't even sell the proper masks to protect you from solvent at the art store.
Yeah.
And, you know, my relationship with solvents was very much my relationship with the medium in the first place, because I started off as acrylic because I felt like, well, solvents is the grown-up material. And a lot of people who have that urge, everybody knows who they are, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not right now they're in real estate or whatever, you know, but you have that urge to paint. You're going to go to the art store and you're going to look at the apothecary madness that's on the store shelves for oil. And you're going to go, I can't deal with this. I'm going to start with acrylic just to like get my feet wet. That has formaldehyde in it, by the way. I don't know, you know, that in the process, and also it off gases. And, you know, as somebody that cares about the environment, when you think about the microplastics that you're casually rinsing down the drain because you think, well, thank God this doesn't need solvent, so no problem for washing my brushes. And then you eventually, hopefully, graduate to oil, but then you're in solvent land. And then people would walk into my studio just, you know, when I'd have a studio visit, and they would be like, oh, I love the smell. It smells like creativity. Like they literally associate solvent with creativity. But the best things that you can do to wean yourself off solvent is, we're going to get to the big, big thing, is to discover the oil and chalk medium, because I don't use solvent at all anymore. But it's also how you wash your brushes and to have more brushes, because a lot of times you'll use a fewer amount of brushes and you have to resist that urge to dip it into the terp or the solvent or the OMS or whatever you want to use to wipe off the color to go into a new color. So get a wide mouth mason jar. They have two kinds. They have, like, I think it's 3-inch and 5-inch, whatever. You get the wider one. They have them at Smart and Final, Bed Bath & Beyond, Target, you know, Home Depot. And then if you have more brushes, they can fan out without touching each other. So some people paint and they put their brushes on the, I once had a student who was an art teacher, by the way, who kept a coffee tin of solvent about a quarter inch in it and kept his brushes upside down in it, which of course ruins the ferrule, you know, just to constantly be able to not have to worry about changing the color. So changing the color is a huge part of a reason why we're addicted to solvent. And then also the myth that you need solvent to clean your brushes. So I've been painting for 30 years, and let's say for a good 10, I was in classes, you know, like I would always need to, if I was feeling out of touch with my, because before I became a full-on exhibiting artist and got a gallery and museums and whatnot, I was in that mode that many people are in, where you're sort of kind of figuring it out and not hiding in your art, but you're sort of understanding how it all works and works together, because it is a craft, you know, even though a lot of art schools and a lot of people don't want to interrupt your creativity with the concept or the word of craft, which is another, the whole de-skilling, which is a movement, a de-skilling concept.
And don't even get me started on the whole business.
Yeah.
You've probably heard me rant on the show about the necessary, the need for business training, financial information training.
The myth that you need to be stupid in order to be more creative is so far from the truth. All through these classes, the lectures and education about how to clean your brushes and how to set your table and how to come up with a system that doesn't force you to kind of get reoriented every time you start has made it so that a lot of people have developed habits that just expose them to more and more solvent, bad habits. So especially after getting sick, I spent a lot of time thinking about what's going to be the most efficient and clean and environmentally friendly way, zero waste way, and zero off-gassing way for me to approach this medium. And my father was a surgeon, and this was a long time ago, and he used to, when he used to bring me to watch him operate in the room. I would scrub up with him when I was like a kid, because I wanted to be a surgeon at one point. And the way that they have the instrument tray and everything laid out before them, and, you know, I would watch him just put out his hand and say scalpel, you know, whatever it was, knife, you know, whatever, 00 silk, you know, when he was sewing people up. And I thought, I need to recreate this frictionless environment in my studio so that I'm conscious of how to avoid waste and exposing myself to harmful solvents. We really dove right into it, didn't we?
We did. I knew we were going to. I thought, let me introduce you because we're going to get right to it. I think there's a mindfulness component that you're talking about and being present as you're painting instead of just going on autopilot, because autopilot can be dangerous.
Well, yes, if you're not approaching it from the start with understanding all the pitfalls. And one of the things that I did not include in my book, because it's something that I discovered after it was submitted, writing a book, you know, with a traditional publisher is like a very surreal process, because I submitted it in the fall of 2018 and it didn't come out until 2022. And then there was that thing where that tanker got stuck in the Suez Canal. And so it was delayed. I was like, it's on there. It's on there. That's why they keep delaying the publication. So it didn't come out till June of 2021. And, you know, because it involved pictures and it was technical and it was being vetted by organic chemists from Stanford and whatnot, like it was a kind of a rigorous, it wasn't like a novel, you know. So what am I saying? So that process may be unable to include something that I also discovered that I really like is I used to always have a stack of paper towels on the left of my palette area, so that I would wipe my brushes off there. Even though I don't use solvent, and even though I have that gigantic mason jar with the brushes fanned outward so they don't touch each other. But anyway, so I replaced it for pads of watercolor paper, because I think of color, every kind of color, it's like a kind of gold, you know, you don't want to waste it. And so I also have a technique for storing unused color. And when you don't use solvent and all that smelly stuff, you can take so much more advantage of the medium, because you can literally scoop up with a palette knife at the end of a painting day, the color that you've mixed, cross it on the lip of a sealable container, and then it reduces the surface area of the paint that it's exposed. And it becomes almost like a little gob of toothpaste, but it develops a film over it. And then weeks, months later, you can take a pin in it and squeeze out that exact color. So that was that. That's in the book. That's in the book. But the thing that wasn't in the book is that I still had to wipe off my brushes. So I would use paper towel. But now I use watercolor paper and I end up having multiple pieces where every time a layer dries, I put another one down and they look like these incredible abstract paintings now. And then I cut them up and those are my note cards. In fact, I gave you one.
Yes, I've made bookmarks from mine where when I watercolor, like you said, when you have those extra swipes. So that's a terrific idea.
Yeah. So try it with oil. It's sexy. Okay. It's so sexy because it's like frozen rock. You know, it's so beautiful. It's just, yeah, it's amazing. I love painting.
Well, thank you. So, you know, after a couple of episodes of feeling like I was going to faint in my studio, I ended up investing in what I thought was a really good air purifier. And I do use it. It's always on. And it is a charcoal filter that's supposed to clean the volatile organic compounds, or VOCs for our listeners, that emit gases from certain solids and liquids. It filters those out of the air. And I've been using Gamsol in a tiny amount, probably a quarter inch at a time, in a mason jar, small one, because they have that two-part lid where you can have the disc on top with a little lip so you can drop it on there to keep it covered while you are not using it. And I rarely need it because I do dry wipe my brushes. And instead of swishing them, I just dry wipe them if I'm switching colors. But it sounds like that air purifier is not enough. Mm-mm. So even if it's not signaling that it's in the orange or in the red,
it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who also has eczema, by the way, so like I can relate to that, and allergies and migraines and, you know, whatever, which I stopped getting, by the way, It's not worth it. And one of the issues is that oil is such, I mean, I was at the Getty yesterday and I was looking at all the paintings from the 1500s that are oil on panel and mixed with tempera because they were originally using it to see if they could make the tempera paintings impervious. And then they were like, wow, this stuff is great. It's really flexible too. Gee, you know, I could paint this on cloth. And if I could paint it on cloth, that means when I get a commission from that Italian guy down in Rome in my studio in Florence, I could like make it 8 by 10 feet and just have it rolled up and delivered when it dries. So painting is a kind of a technology. And the advantages of that technology have been so misunderstood. And the last few centuries, because there wasn't a textbook for it, the formulas weren't written down, this misconception got perpetuated, which was that you need resin. Let's back up and talk about solvents for a second.
I'm allergic to resin too.
Okay. So the only reason why you need to use solvent is to dilute resin. Solvents dry by evaporation. Oil dries by oxidation. There are two different chemical reactions with the air in order to create what they are. Solvents weaken the bonds that oil forms to bind the little tiny rocks into place. And oil hardens and becomes heavier over time. And it's an exothermic reaction, oxidation. So a molecule is being grabbed from the air of oxygen and it's releasing heat in order to do that process. And that's why if you have a lot of oil-soaked rags, they can potentially, it's never happened to me, but they can spontaneously combust. But when you throw solvents which evaporate into the mix, and acrylic also dries by evaporating too, you know, but if when you throw solvents into the mix, it becomes toxic. And there was this myth that you needed resin, which requires solvents to dissolve. So when you go to the art store and you see Damar varnish, which makes your paintings beautiful and shiny, but I have a whole chapter on varnishing. You don't need to use that anymore. When you see Damar varnish, those used to come in rocks. They were like crystals. And the only way to get them to be in a form that a painter could use is you needed solvent to dissolve them. But solvent isn't needed for oil. It just weakens the paint film. And so the only reason why solvents were introduced, because there was this, in Leonardo's treatise on painting, there's like a mention of toning a canvas with sand arrack and oil of spike. Like there's, you know, there's allusions to solvent, because you have to picture these guys. They were like in a church somewhere, or who knows what kind of building. And they had like cadavers in one table where they were like trying to figure out how the body worked. And then there were alchemists in another corner where they were trying to find a slurry that would make them live forever. And then they had the painters painting with things. Like, you know, people didn't really know how things work. So they had to kind of figure it out by a lab situation, you know? But we have modern science now. So we now know how things work. So the fact that you're using solvent with oil without resin makes no sense from a chemistry standpoint. But my big highlight of this train of thought is that because of the prevalence of solvent that's being handed down from teacher to teacher to teacher, is that people are approaching oil painting as if it's a medium that it's not meant to be. And they're being taught a la prima, which is to try to do things all in one sitting, or do things faster and the need for speed and all that. And there's ways to accomplish that without solvent. And so when I go to my studio, it smells like my coffee. It doesn't smell like anything. It smells like oil drying a little bit, but there's zero need for me to, I could like work in a hermetically sealed room. I don't need a purifier. It took me 6 months to undo the habits of dipping the brush into solvent, of how I rinse my brushes. It took me 6 months. And it was like I was addicted to a drug, honestly. Like I had like my nasty, smelly stuff in the corner. And I'd be like, okay, I'm not going to use this today. I'm going to like test myself, you know? Anyway, I didn't mean to get so technical, but you don't need solvent. You don't need solvent at all. And you don't need the purifier. I know that's shocking, but you don't need the purifier.
That's good.
Yeah.
So what do you use instead, of course, is the magic question. I have tried, at first when I was having difficulty with my allergies, I switched to walnut oil. And then I discovered that, of course, walnut oil for cooking was not the same thing as our artist grade. It made everything beat up.
Yeah.
But even then I found that the walnut oil, it had a different feel. There was more drag. So you have also said specifically about walnut oil, which was a favorite of Da Vinci and Perugino and Raphael, that it's less durable than other oils as a medium. So what does that mean and what should we be using?
So walnut oil and safflower oil are clearer than linseed oil. So it becomes about color, speed, and viscosity. By the way, that could be like the new diamond.
I was just thinking that it's like the three C's, right?
So they found that when they took linseed oil and they put it in the sun, that's how they started. And there's recipes for this in Vasari's Le Vite, you know, the lives of artists, and where you take linseed oil, you put it in the sun, and they have these elaborate things to try to catch the bugs, you know, from getting into it. It pre-polymerizes it. Like, so oil painting, the way when it polymerizes, it forms these beautiful little, they're, in my mind, they're these beautiful little carbon atom chains, you know, and the sun kind of speeds up that process and it makes it clearer, but it also makes it thicker. So stand oil, which some of you may be familiar with, is a clearer, thicker formula. And they call it stand oil is because they arrive at it at a different place. They actually literally, they go through this process of heating it slowly, and then the impurities would fall to the bottom and they'd have to let it stand in order to get rid of the impurities. So that's why they don't do this anymore, but they still call it stand oil. I mean, the names are really funny. It's like lamp black. The paint color was one of the early organic compounds that they, you know, they used to scrape the inside of a lamp to get the black. You know, just the color section of the book is one of my favorite sections. I could literally talk about it forever. Like I could talk about the color blue for like an hour, but whenever I talk about the book, I'm always talking about solvent. There's a huge, wonderful part of the book that talks about color. So when walnut oil and safflower oil are less durable, it's clearer, but they don't form as strong bonds. So linseed oil is really the best oil, but you can't get any oils that are made from the food industry because they put preservatives in it to increase the shelf life because they're making it at an industrial scale. So you need to kind of understand the medium literally, like what you're using. So inside a tube of paint, every pigment has a desire for a certain ratio of oil to it. And there's an acronym, I should say, called pigment to volume concentration, PVC. And if you just paint with oil, you're going to be creating an imbalance in how much oil is to the pigment. But chalk, which they have many names for, you can get it at the hardware store, you can get it calcium carbonate, marble dust, and each different kind of marble, like Carrara marble, you know, all the different marbles have a different kind of quality to them, but they're very minor. But you could literally just go on Kremer paints, or, you know, you could get it on Amazon, a bag of calcium carbonate, and you don't want, it should be fine. It shouldn't have any texture to it. And it does this amazing thing. It dissolves in the oil and becomes clear. So it's an invisible pigment. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, it can't be true. I need to test this, which is exactly what I did. I was like, this can't be true. So I took, let's say, two parts chalk into one part oil. And I remember taking cadmium red. I'm like, this is going to lighten it because this is this white powder. And I'm putting it in, and it's not toxic to inhale, but obviously you don't want to breathe in a bunch of dust, but it's not like fine glass, which will cause black lung. It's just dust. It's rock dust. But when you put it in, it does something incredible, is that it lowers the opacity of the paint. So it increases the transparency. So you can do a glaze of cadmium red over something. You know how zinc is this sort of problematic paint, but when it was discovered, they thought, oh, look, this is a paint that we can use in lieu of lead, you know, to make those fine little lacings, but it's super brittle. And a lot of times manufacturers will combine it with titanium white. And again, this is like, we could do a whole other podcast on colors and pigments and paints.
Now, I was going to ask that about the titanium. I have a half and half mix, zinc and titanium. And I'm like, should I use this or is this a good idea?
It's fine. I mean, I'm sure you probably have one that's mixed with some additive like barium sulfide, which makes it really buttery. But the snobby paint world art nerds really want it to be ropey instead of buttery, which is when a paint gets thixotropic, which is what lead white, like I said, blah, 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 rabbit hole. Let's go back to the chalk.
So we were talking chalk.
Yes.
So you mix the chalk with what?
Oil, with linseed oil.
Linseed oil.
Yeah. Now, I don't do this in some kind of porcelain or metal or special cup, like a small cup. I go to the restaurant supply store and I get those little ketchup cups and I scoop up a couple tablespoons of chalk and then I squirt, because I keep my oil in a squirt bottle, I squirt the type of oil I want. And I go into such great detail about this in the book, but like I'm funny, you know, so it's like interesting. But anyway, so I put it in and then I take a chopstick and I swirl it around. And this is all disposable because you don't want to wash oil down the drain. You don't want to wash any of the stuff down the drain. It'll clog your pipes. But you can dispose of it. It's literally oil and little tiny invisible rocks, right? So it's not going to harm the environment, nothing like that. And you tip that mixture into your mix color. And then you take a palette knife and then you mix it into it and you will get a glaze that's even sexier and more malleable than that concoction that's promoted in all the other books, which is a third Damar. Yeah. You will be able to make like a transparent veil. Like think of that paint, that portrait of Queen Elizabeth, where the collar is like that insane see-through collar. You can do that with titanium white, because if you just put enough chalk in it, it becomes invisible and dissolves. It doesn't just become invisible. It dissolves in the oil and becomes clear.
Wow. Velázquez would just roll over in his grave and be like, woohoo.
No. So Velázquez is the one. In fact, he was one of the people that wrote down and recorded that this is what he did. And so there's a couple paint manufacturers who make a pre-made version of this putty. I personally like to make it But in any case, because Velasquez is one of the people that recorded this method of using chalk, they have a tube called Velasquez medium, which is simply stand oil and chalk. And, you know, there's a whole chapter about this and how to make the mediums and everything like that. But the other thing you're dealing with is viscosity. So definitely one of the things you're going to have to get used to is the wateriness that you're making your paints with the solvent. You're going to have to leave that experience behind in order to wean yourself solvents. And that's what took me 6 months. It was the best effort I've ever put into my life because it gave me back painting.
This wraps up part one of my interview with American artist and author Kimberly Brooks. Part two is available now at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode 71. Don't forget to check out my new online portrait course, The Portrait Code, with modules in design, composition, color theory, perspective, and confidence included. It's everything I wished I could find in one complete online painting course. Learn more at PassionatePainterAcademy.com. Until next time, go make something.